Hello, and welcome back to the Women's Soccer Podcast. I'm your host for tonight's episode, Liam, but you may know me better as LTG. Today, we'll be talking about the USL Super League, a competitive Division 1 league, which will be directly in competition with NWSL on the soccer pyramid. I'll go over the league off the field, my thoughts on it, what this league's going to be, what will be a success for the league, what my thoughts on the league are generally off the field, and we'll transition to talking about the league on the field. So if you are excited for the launch of a second league that will be running on a schedule that will allow for women's soccer practically all year in the U.S., listen to this episode as this will be almost a little like mini fan guide for the league based on what we have so far. So without further ado, let's get right into it. Okay, so I first want to talk about off the field and the franchises as a whole. I've been really impressed with the branding drop of the league. I think every team is super, super unique. I love how every team is owning their identity. I love the brandings of Carolina Ascent, FC, and Tampa Bay Sun, which have been two of my favorite teams on the field as well. I think every team is a completely different look, a completely different style, and I love that. I think it's great for teams to have originality, but also for teams to be recognized as the same part of the league. It's a balance of both. And so branding-wise, I think the team's done a great job, at least some teams have. We'll talk a little bit later about certain teams which haven't really been pushing the league as much in regards to getting player signings out or really even just building a team whatsoever. So I first want to talk about the league in general and this whole launch of the league and answer the first question that comes to mind, really, is this league necessary for women's soccer? And I think I've had a lot of different opinions about it, differing opinions that have really gone back and forth. At first, I was quite hesitant. As women's sports are thriving right now, and as people like to say, if it's not broke, don't fix it. The NWSL is doing an amazing job expanding. Average attendance has reached over 10,000 across the league, which is, though low in comparison to many top men's sports, it's growing for women's sports. And I think we need to make sure that we don't dilute that, and not the talent pool shouldn't get diluted, but we also need to ensure that NWSL can still grow. And I think the USL Super League, at first, I was very concerned about how it would attempt to mess up what the NWSL is doing. I also have kind of moved past that idea just due to the fact that I don't think it will be formidable to the NWSL, because at the end of the day, all these teams are in the same markets as NWSL teams, state-wise, every team, which is a very idiotic decision, which we'll talk about a little bit later, which is why I've been questioning the sustainability of this league in the first place. But people aren't going to choose young prospects over Alex Morgan. That's just not a thing. I'm sorry. It's marketing. It's marketing 101. People aren't going to choose going to see someone who is a significantly less profiled player than someone who is a global superstar. It's just not how that works. And the ignorance that this league has had and the audacity that it's had, quite frankly, that it's really infuriated me to put all of these teams in the same exact state market, really not great. Really a stupid decision, especially the DC team playing in the same stadium as the Washington Spirit. Good luck getting 2,000 fans at a game. If you think Spirit fans are going to stop going and watching Corey Bethune, Trentney Rodman, some of the best athletes in the world, to go see the ragtag team that DC Power FC will be, and that is no disrespect to the players, but that is disrespect to the league and the lack of attentiveness and the audacity to think that they're going to take over the league. The DC Power FC on their website posted that they are the number one professional women's soccer team in DC. You're not even the third. You're the third best team in your stadium. So let's not get that hyper about this, because your team has not been established, and to try and threaten what the NWSL has built is, quite frankly, it's stupid and it's annoying, because women's sports are thriving, and why do we need to try and mess with that? Those were my original thoughts. Though I still maintain those thoughts and still have been frustrated with this league, which is why I've been holding off on recording this episode for a while. I do think that the women's soccer talent pool in the US is so great, and the fact that the NWSL spots are limited, it is important for players to have an opportunity to play, even though they do have the opportunity overseas. Overseas soccer is just as talented, if not more talented, than women's soccer in the U.S. If you look at top clubs like Barcelona, Lyon, obviously these players who can't make that NWSL were not playing at those clubs. They were playing at teams in some countries like Iceland, which we've heard. And again, not to minimize these players, because this is the reason why I like this league. These players deserve a chance to play. And it's great to see that they're getting a chance to do that at the domestic level, which is obviously a huge step in the right direction. But at the same time, it is that question about the league's mission. And it's the same idea of supporting something that you don't like the cause, if that makes sense. I don't love the cause of the Super League so far, which seems to be so preoccupied with just taking away from what the NWSL has built rather than working with it. Moving in the same markets is really frustrating. But at the end of the day, I've tried really, really hard to get over that and stop being a little annoyed about that, because this league is going to be hopefully full of such fun talent and amazing young players. So I do think that that is a valid argument to this league. I just hope that they can collaborate together. To go on to the same market's point of view, I just really don't understand from perspective of if your whole mission statement from the men's side, which should carry over on the women's side because your whole initiative is the one kind of club motto, which is where like teams like Brooklyn FC and Lexington SC have, and Spokane team have also a men's team connected. So if you're really that invested in the one club mentality, which is all focused on bringing professional soccer to new atmospheres, why would you choose the same? There's only 14 teams in the NWSL that are located in 12 separate states, and you chose for your eight of the states that were mentioned. It's just so stupid. The NWSL only makes up 24% of the states in our country. There are more than 3/4 of the states in our country that do not have professional women's soccer. And you intentionally choose to put your league, which is inferior to the NWSL, in those states that do have it. It makes no sense to me whatsoever, because it's also disappointing due to the fact that we know that this league is not going to have the same support as the NWSL. That's not to say that women's sports aren't profitable. I don't want to make that seem like that's my mission. That's what I'm saying, or that's what I'm trying to infer here, because I love the NWSL. I'm a season ticket holder, and I think women's sports are amazing and growing. But the fact is people aren't going to be that. It's not like people can have two season tickets to a season that overlaps. People don't have season tickets to two different sports and go to those games. And for a competing market, for the demographic of people in women's soccer, those fans, they're going to choose the more established league with the better players in the same market. It's just a very simple concept that if a 14-year-old can understand it, I think a bunch of people with fancy degrees that supposedly got these jobs should be able to understand it. It's really stupid to me that people who have earned these jobs can't put these markets in a place where women's soccer can thrive. I saw videos recently of a lower USL league, funnily enough, in Detroit, which has exploded for women's soccer, which is amazing. And that's the whole point of the USL Super League, I thought at least, was to give more players opportunities. It should also be to give more fans opportunities, to spread women's soccer to other cities, which is why the US Women's National Team, for instance, plays a lot of their friendlies in cities that don't have NWSL teams, i.e. playing in Colorado and Minnesota. So that's just my little, like, first bite into the apple, I guess, at this league. But to elaborate more on the franchises, I just still find it really dumb that they're in the same markets. I love the branding of most of these teams. I just don't understand how you're going to fill these stadiums that are in the same exact city when these teams are competing directly. For Audi Field, for instance, which we've already seen has looked horrific on TV. Same with Lynn Family Stadium for Racing Louisville, which I think Lexington SC is going to be playing at. Someone correct me if I'm wrong with that. But I just don't understand how, for instance, DC Power is going to play three games a weekend. For instance, that's their first home game. They play on the same weekend as both DC United and Washington Spirit. And if you really think that people are going to go to two games, let alone three, it's just baffling to me that people in the league just threw DC in there at the last second. It looked like, from an outsider view, it felt like they were just trying to steal the NWSL's momentum. And I'm sorry, USL, but it's not going to happen. And if I can figure that out, sorry to sound repetitive, I would hope that people who were hired for this league would be able to figure that out. So moving on, sorry for that rambling, I want to talk about what this league's going to be. What is this league expected to do for women's soccer? Well, I think I already touched on this by saying it will create more jobs for women in the sporting industry in the United States. I think in the past we've seen so many players who have had to go overseas and play their professional football there because they don't have opportunities to play in the U.S. And that's one thing that's amazing. I saw a story recently about one of the players on Fort Lauderdale, Cameron Brooks, who tore her ACL and her meniscus right before the NWSL draft, and she got her opportunity to play there, which is great. She's the one who was a great goal scorer in college. I've seen reports saying she's a left back. I don't know which one. I've seen her more play in college as a forward, but I guess she can maybe play there as well, apparently. But anyway, I really think that that's one thing that really shines through about this league, is that it will give more women opportunities. And I'm not going to go on here and say that that's a bad thing, because it clearly isn't. What I don't want is it to have a negative ripple effect on women in sports, if that makes sense, and take away from the NWSL's progress. I just do not understand if there is such a budding market for women's sports all across the country. We've seen that with the Caitlin Clark movement in college basketball. Same thing with Angel Reese. I should give a shout out to some other college players. Look at the women's college basketball tournament, March Madness, that happened recently. If you look at the NWSL, there is so much, even the WNBA recently, there is so much investment and interest in women's sports. And that's the pie of that, so to speak, in getting to experience the magic of women's sports in person to get shared. A lot of NWSL teams and WNBA teams are in the same exact market. And now, literally every single team in the Super League are in similar markets. To be fair, some of them are quite distant. Like the Brooklyn FC team, for instance, plays deep into Coney Island, which is probably about a 4 to 3 hour drive away from Red Bull Arena. I know that's going to be a very annoying trip for most people who live in the Manhattan area like myself. But I genuinely just do not understand this league's intentions with the marketing. So I'm just going to get by that and talk about this league's intention as a on-the-field product should be to give more women talent. They shouldn't try to directly compete with the NWSL, which is why I do think that the NWSL, yeah, is going to be superior to answer that question. I don't think it's that debatable at the moment. What the Super League has shown is it's not as formidable as the NWSL. I have heard rumblings of some formidable players that aren't come to the league. There's been a lot of talk about that. And so if the Super League really has all the spark, which they've been amplifying, I've hoped that they'd have some more star power coming. Natasha Flint was a great signing for Tampa Bay Sun FC today, who have been the team who signed all their players. But that leads me to my next point. Tampa Bay had released 5 of their signings, their first 5 players, before most any other team has released a single player. And still, some teams have 9 players on the roster while others have 0. And I think that lack of parity clearly is going to be present due to the fact that some teams clearly care about having women's teams, some teams don't. And the thing that I really don't understand is it's so early on. Like, at least fake it. Like, it just feels like such a lack of investment. You got your team, congratulations. Now you have to build a team. Just because you get the franchise doesn't mean you can just sit there and do nothing. And it just is so frustrating. I'm gonna shout the teams out because they deserve to get shouted out. Brooklyn FC, DC Power FC, who have at least named a head coach, that's something. And Lexington SC have signed literally 0 players, so I don't know what they're doing there. And you literally applied for these teams. It's not like you just were handed these teams automatically. You put an effort to get these teams and you don't care about them? It just really doesn't make sense to me. I think Jess Garzano might sign for that team based on the fact that she's been interacting with a lot of their posts on social media, and considering that she's from the St. John's team, who I loved watching, as I have family that have gone there. So although these teams probably are doing stuff behind the scenes, I just wish that there was a little bit more, I guess, effort to rile up a community. Because yes, I'm not doubting the fact that they hopefully are signing people behind the scenes, but if you want fans to get amped about this new league, you need to get them players, relatable players they can empathize with, who they can really connect with. And that's a big part of sports, is it's not just the on-the-field product, it's the off-the-field product, with the social media influence of the game growing. I think the league has done a good job from a marketing standpoint, team-wise, but player-wise is now, with these signings coming in, a really important aspect that the team needs to look at. I would love to see an open cup for the USL Super League. I think that would be such a great way for the teams to really interact with each other, which I think leads into the CONCACAF Champions League debate, because I've seen a lot of people wondering about what will happen for future iterations of that tournament when there's another league in the US, when the US is only allotted 3 slots. I personally think that the NWSL should keep those slots, or if they do have an open cup, it should just be based on the open cup. The teams that finish in the top 3 should get those spots, because that would be fair, because every team has an opportunity to get there. So That's my personal opinion on that. Before moving on to the player point of this discussion, I want to talk a little bit about what would be seen as a successful season for this league. For me, it's that fans show up to games. A lot of teams are playing in varying sized arenas. It's surprising to me that the teams who I actually thought have done the best with the roster building are playing in the worst arenas. Florida is the Florida side, Tampa Bay Sun FC, my bad, are building their own stadium on the waterfront, which is really, really cool. Fort Lauderdale is playing at a college stadium, which I wish they weren't, because I wish they could play with someone bigger. But then also, one of the seemingly least ambitious sides in DC Power, who are not really building a team at all, with just their head coach, who used to be the Utah Royals assistant coach. They are playing at an 18,000-seat stadium where they're directly competing, again, to use that concept, with a NWSL team with some of the best talents in the world. And they are no players on the field, so, right? So to fill up a stadium, you obviously have to have the talent. And I think these teams can easily fill up the stadium in other markets, like the Fort Lauderdale team that are sizing up, to speak, starting somewhere small and moving up. But for the DC Power team to really be that confident, and also Dallas Trinity, who, yes, signed two players, but the Cotton Bowl has a very big capacity. It is a former stadium. So to think that that stadium wouldn't be that big is a little confusing, let's just say. It holds 91,000 seats. Yeah. So if you think it's going to look good on TV, that's inaccurate. I just don't really understand that either as well. I think it's like, cool, yeah, you're renovating the stadium, cool, yay. But at the end of the day, you still have to fill the stadium, right? People see a stadium on TV, they don't see the renovations that have happened, they see the seats. And for women's sports in general, especially for a new league to be successful, getting people in the seats is the most important thing. And when you're trying to fill that big of a stadium, it feels a little ambitious, and too ambitious perhaps to get into that for just the first season. So that's not priority number one. Priority one number two is establishing a brand, establishing teams. These are essentially all expansion teams, so it'll be weird in the fact that it's not going to be like Bay FC and Utah who are coming into an established league. These teams are made up of players who have never played together before, and even though of course coaches are considering styles of play, I would hope, in the building of these rosters, these teams have still not played at all together. So you have to see the combination of chemistry on the pitch, because individual talent can only get you so far. And so even though these teams have done a good job, at least some of them, building a roster, it's not about putting it together. For some teams, it's just about getting players to be on the field, because even people who don't know that much about soccer know that you need 11 players to be on the field, not just a nice stadium. So to essentially summarize, these teams are building something from scratch, and they need it to look nice. They can't just be faking it till they make it. It's about building. This is not just about the first season. It's about building a league that can be successful and survive. There have been two iterations of women's soccer in the past, the WPS and the WSA, who have not survived. And I wouldn't be that surprised if the USL Super League ended up being one if they continue acting like they are right now. This league needs to establish from a fan base perspective, from a on-field perspective, but also just from a financial perspective. They need to maintain profitability, and even if they aren't making profit initially, they need to be gaining revenue like it's now or never. These leagues are not just entering into a landscape where it's empty, right? They have competition, and the competition can eat them up. And if I'm an NWSL team, due to the ludicrous planning of these leagues and these organizations, all 8 NWSL teams can go watch these club teams play, which I do find interesting. Like, there are teams in the same market, yes, so that would actually be 7, because Orlando is the only team in Florida. But there are literally, if I'm going to scout half the NWSL's teams, I can literally go watch these teams and scalp all these players for my own teams. That's going to be how this league's profitable, and I hate to say it, because that's going to, I guess, put a dent in the attempt at building something. But you really need to make sure that you can build something really great. You want some players that are fun off the field. You want to give a good experience to your fans. And yeah, you want to sell these players to the NWSL. And that, okay, that language sounds really bad. You want to get these players a transfer to the NWSL so you can make a profit off them. Oh, that also sounds not great, I guess. The lingo of soccer transfers is a little bit messed up in some ways, I will say. Just treating players like an asset. But point being is the league needs to make profitability. If you're an NWSL team and you need more players, with expansion coming up, rosters will become emptier because teams will lose players to expansion. That's how an expansion process works. So if I'm Gotham FC or North Carolina Courage, I can look to Brooklyn FC and Carolina Ascent and take their best players. Not a change for the players, really. I guess one for Brooklyn FC, because like Gotham FC is really located in New Jersey when you think about it. Carolina Ascent, though, for instance, they play in the same exact market. So if I'm North Carolina Courage scout, I can take a player from the Ascent and it won't change a single thing for them except for the team they're playing for. So I guess that's going to wrap up our talk off the field. So it's already 20 minutes in, so let's just go transition to some on-the-field talk. So for the on-the-field section of this episode, I just wanted to talk about the players that each team had signed and almost rate every team, starting with the eighth team, or the worst team so far, and moving down the list. So first, I started in eighth place with Brooklyn FC and Lexington SC as a tie, so that's eighth and seventh place gone. The reason why I gave these teams the last place is very self-explanatory, but I'll just explain it really quickly, is neither of these teams have signed any players, nor do they have a coach, so there's just feels like to be a lack of ambition for the at least the women's side of these teams, which is really disappointing to see for a lot of the reasons I talked about earlier. So overall, I would just say there's not really much to assess here, but I just wish that these teams had showed a little bit more ambition in building their rosters, and so I just hope to see a little bit more from them. And this ranking, by the way, it's not going to just be based on the amount of players signed, it's going to be about on the basis of the talent of roster and etc. So next is another team with zero players signed, DC Power FC, but they do have a coach and a formidable ownership group. The ownership group, there's a lot of business people who have taken an invested interest in the side, but one of the big celebrity owners who I'm really excited to have in women's soccer landscape is Angel Reese, who obviously is a name I don't really have to explain a lot about who she is, but she is the Chicago Sky center / power forward and formerly a player of LSU. So overall, this team has shown a little bit, at least, of ambition going into the team. They do have a head coach hired, who I talked about earlier. So I think that's a good sign, as they at least have the pieces in place to invest in creating this roster and getting their side ready to be on the pitch for August. So that's at least a positive point, a reference that we could look at there. So that makes me feel a little bit better about the team, but overall, it is a little bit of concern that is highlighting my emotions right now going into the team. So we've talked about the three teams that I'm signing, so that wasn't really that controversial, but now I wanted to get into the fifth place team. So I feel like if I had to do this in tiers, there would be the bottom three we talked about would be the bottom tier. The next two teams I'm about to talk about would be the like middle tier, and then I'd move to the top tier. So next, I would probably have to go with Dallas Trinity FC. They have, to their fairness, have built a team which does include a decent amount of experience. Amber Brooks is a player who trained at the Chicago Red Stars before the season started during the preseason, but never got officially signed with the team. She has previously played with the Washington Spirit along with the Seattle Reign. So she has a lot of different experience in the NWSL, which will really be great for this new side. They also signed Haley Davidson today, as I'm recording this, who's a Pittsburgh player who played recently in Australia. So it's good to see a mix of youth and experience. Overall, considering they're playing in the Cotton Bowl, they're going to need some big names to fit in there. They have such big expectations. I saw that the minimum price for a game is $25, which if you compare that to NWSL, it's a lot more than that. So you're going to have to have the talent to back that up, considering that that's a little bit egregious based on the talent on the field. So I hope that this team can continue growing. My next place team would have to be Spokane Zephyr. I do think that they have a lot of good talent on their side. One player I'm especially keen on is Sarah Clark, who not only is incredible ball control for a center back, so good with her feet, is also just a shooter. I saw the goal that she scored when she was playing in Australia recently, and it's the one that you're probably thinking of, where she scored from way outside the box and completely chipped the goalkeeper. Looked like a striker's finish. Such a beautiful passer. Great on the ball. I know that a lot of North Carolina Courage fans, because she played there as a National League relacement player, were really keen on her, so it's good to see her get that chance. Overall, even though they do have 7 players in their roster, which I probably should be giving them more credit for, I'm not that impressed with the talent on the roster, if I have to be quite frank. I do think that they have a lot of good young talent that will continue getting better as the season goes on. But overall, I do think there's a lot of room for improvement. This team, though, will continue getting better and better as the year goes on. A lot of these players don't have NWSL experience, except for Taylor Ulmer, would be the person I said has the most experience, considering she's played with both the Spirit, Louisville, and Gotham FC as a replacement player. So she has a lot of ongoing experience there. But a lot of these players were just draftees from this draft that got cut, or players that didn't get drafted, or players in previous draft classes. So though it's a young team, I think this team will continue growing, which is something that I'm really excited for them to get to do. So I will say, I'll revamp what I said earlier, take back rather. I think that there's a bottom four and a top four. I think the bottom four are the ones I talked about as the four least impressive teams, which are the ones that have no signings, plus Dallas Trinity, who only have 2 signings. And the top four, I have to include Spokane Zephyr in there because of how they do have some ambition, at least going into this. They've signed players. They've looked pretty good overall, so I'll give them credit where credit's due. Even though they signed more players on paper than Tampa Bay, I have to have Tampa Bay be a little bit above them, which they're going to be in third place, as you probably can tell from now. So they have the only, like, real concrete international player, if you're going to abide by the rules that they have in the NWSL, which is, it's not a foreign-born player. So Natasha Flint was signed today, and she has experience playing for Liverpool, Celtic, and plenty of amazing clubs in Europe, which is great to see for the league. They also signed NWSL veteran and previous Rookie of the Year plus USA-capped player Erica Timrak, who will lead the front line along with former Tigres player Riley Mattingly-Parker, who was drafted by Louisville, never really got a chance there. One on loan was liked by players and fans at Tigres, so I'm excited to see what she brings to the team. Moving to the midfield, Jordan Listro, Domi Richardson. Listro is a player who's Canadian national team experience, very good at the ball, going to be a box six that should play in the double pivot potentially alongside Domi Richardson, who has not got an opportunity to play professionally since her Gotham FC chance. She didn't make the Angel City roster after being a preseason invitee there. So it's good to see these players, again, who are more than professional level and capability, get the opportunity. And then Vivian Bissett, who was, and again, another Canadian international who came into the league after not getting drafted in the NWSL draft. So overall, some good talent there. But we now get to move on to our top two. This was a decision that was very, very hard for me to build, along with the decision actually with Tampa Bay, even though they have less signings, due to the fact that they're building their own stadium, which shows a lot of initiated investment. That is quite impressive. But I do have to wrap this up by saying I think I'm going to have to give Carolina Ascent first place. I think Fort Lauderdale just gets edged out a little bit by the fact, even though they have one less player, I just don't think I have the quality of Carolina, which we'll talk about a little bit later. So first of all, I like what they're doing with this team. Nia Christopher was a player who got called in to preseason camp for Gotham FC. There's a lot of talent on this team. Luana Grabias, sorry for me mispronouncing that twice before getting it finally right, is a really talented player, great in hold up, good on the half turn. I've loved watching what I've seen from her. Gianna Gourlay was a player who was surprisingly undrafted in the NWSL draft, which I think a lot of people were taken by surprise by, but that's also good. Great forward line right there, along with Cameron Books, who on this list is listed as a left back, but I know her to be a out and out 9/ winger, so I'll list her there for the purpose of this episode. Moving to the back line, Celia Gaynor, another player who was drafted by the league, but she just didn't get picked up, which is something that we've seen players like on Spokane Zephyr that we saw, like Emma Jazz Geniak. I'm sorry for that. That was bad pronunciation again. got drafted and just didn't get the opportunity from the Royals. So this is like kind of theme that we're seeing with players either not getting drafted at all, getting drafted, or getting drafted, keep staying on the roster, but then just eventually getting cut. So Addy McCain is another midfielder who's fun to watch on this team, has played with the Current before. Great on the ball. She was on the Red Star last season, but only made one appearance. So at least in regular season competitions, which is disappointing considering that the Red Stars did struggle, and she's a great player, and she did end up getting released along with a few other players on the Super League roster, like Jill Aguilera, who we'll talk about a little bit later, who is on the Carolina Ascent team, which is the team that finished in first place in this ranking. But yeah, I think it's really good to see that this league is giving these players opportunities. Not to skip out on one of the most heartfelt moments of the draft, but also just a baller of a defender, a beast in that back line. Very tall, yes, but great, aggressive side tackler. The first Tongan professional player in Leveni Avaka, who obviously had that heartfelt viral moment at the draft when she was crying after getting picked. Very late into the draft, she was someone who was, again, projected to go way higher, didn't actually end up getting a roster spot on Bay, which is a little bit confusing, but it's great to see her get an opportunity here. Felicia Knox is a player who went way too low, in my opinion, for the NBCL draft. She's a baller at Alabama, out and out 10, who's really good, not just at finishing to the back of the net, but a good creator who will help hopefully connect with players like Christopher and Gurley on the front line. I could see a situation where Liana can drop deeper, which is why there's so much interchangeability in this team, which is so fun for a coach and just for fans, which is why this is a team that I have so good on my calendar to go see them play. Brooklyn FC, who are my local team. But I just really have liked what I've seen with this roster. Felicia Knox, another player who got cut by Angel City during the preseason process, which a lot of fans were surprised by. And last but not least, Daria Raijay, who's another player who has good talent in that sixth role. Considering that McCain and Knox are both attacking-minded midfielders, she'll be someone to help stabilize the defensive end of things. So now I want to move on to first place, and you all know who that is now, obviously. It's Carolina Ascent. You can probably work that out by process of elimination. But one thing I really like with this team is how just, like, versatile everyone is, and they've kind of built a starting 11, so we can talk about that, I guess. I loved the signings. Let's start up top. Mia Corbin, a baller in the Costa Rican League, scored a million goals from the Golden Boot there. She's just a goal scorer through and through. I think she'll be their nine, who will get the ball in the back of the net. Great to see there. Jediah Bedoya, who's a player who plays for Venezuela internationally. Great on the ball, really, really fun to watch, good at getting at back lines, and a nice finisher as well. So good on the wings, beating defenders in that dribble. Same with Riley Baston, who originally played actually in the North Carolina area with the Courage as an Austrian replacement player. It's great to get to see her get an opportunity back in the NWSL after taking a little break abroad. The midfield, though, also has a lot of talent of Taylor Porter, who is an incredibly skilled midfielder who used to play for the Portland Thorns. She also obviously had that amazing goal against the Red Stars, which a lot of fans should have imprinted in their brains. But she's a great six who obviously went to college in the North Carolina area, NC State, which helps with the recruiting process. And lastly, Sydney Studer, who is another defensive midfielder who will help round out that squad there. Moving to the back line, which is where I think they've really, really impressed. I love this back line so far. Starting from the left to right, Jill Aguilera, who we talked about a little bit earlier, the Puerto Rican international, who is great at getting up the pitch. I think she'll be so fun to watch in that left wing back role, maybe even getting to play on the forward line, which she has done for the Red Stars. Even that midfield role, I could see her doing a little bit of that as well. But she's really versatile. She can do everything everywhere. So excited to see her get that opportunity there. Vicky Bruce has played overseas. She's played everywhere. So for her to be the first signing of the team, really great to see her come back to the United States to get an opportunity to play club football here. She's played in, yes, Australia, but also clubs like England for Bristol City. So she has lots of talent there. Kelly Ann Livingstone was a player who got cut by Gotham after being drafted by them and playing a season there. And then Emily Moxie's a player who went undrafted in the draft recently from North Carolina. So that wraps up our analysis of the players and the rosters of the Super League. And that, I guess, that wraps up our whole episode. Thank you so much for tuning into this really exciting episode. We have a lot more content coming, not just about the Super League, but also about the USL. The U.S. Women's National Team, sorry about that, along with the NWSL, Women's Soccer Abroad, and also international content, which will be coming considering that the Olympics are coming up. So be sure to follow us here. We'll obviously have some more content on the Super League as well as it comes closer. So thank you so much for listening to this episode, and have a good week. Peace. Peace out from your host, LDG.